Regent Ball will chair that meeting this morning. Regent Ball.
And yes, I'm filling in for Jason McKinney today, and we have three items. First being FB1 approval of third quarter budget. I don't know, Susan, did you survive your second vaccine? Are you in the room?
I did. Thank you.
Good.
Took a few Advil. I'm all here, so hopefully I don't fall asleep during the presentation, but thank you, Linda. So, if you don't mind, Jeff, bringing up the slideshow. So the first agenda item is the third quarter financial report. Here we go. Listen, Linda, here.
All right.
Okay. So I think what's really important, as we promised the board many months ago, we were going to use our new budgeting software to get the antiquated financial report into a budget software, which I think is not only better, but gives us a lot of opportunities. As I told someone this morning, we're at like the tip of the iceberg of what we can do with this software. But I think it's going to be great for not only the deans and vice presidents, but the whole campus community. So you'll see, and you saw in your agenda packet, that the revenue and expenditures are grouped by specific categories and no longer uses the fund types as we've done in higher education for many years. And what I mean by that is just looking at E&G funds and restricted funds and grants and contracts. As a university grows, you have to look at all of your types of revenue as being fungible revenue. So rather than just segregated into those various pockets. I think what's also important, which Dr. Cavoni brought to campus, is the concept of looking at net tuition revenue. So that's looking at your gross tuition revenue and your discounts. And it's also important to think about your discounts that you wouldn't be getting that tuition revenue or probably the amount of tuition revenue without the discounts, and meaning those are institutional scholarships. Again, we use the new Axiom software. This is not only our budget management tool, but it's our tool for financial and budget reporting, and also will provide us the ability to do financial planning, which I think is of critical importance. And then, while we're not going to share the interactive tool with you here today, this tool can actually allow you to drill down into each category to get granular information, which is really, really important for the deans and vice presidents. So, for example, you can look at a category of travel, and then you can drill down into that category and see how much in-state travel, how much out-of-state travel, international travel, so on and so forth. So, it's really, really a very, very cool tool for us numbers kind of nerds. So this is just the kind of a snapshot of the report on the revenue side. So you'll see it's still there in the budget versus actual for the 2 years and the percent of budget. But as I said, if you actually go into the software itself, you could actually drill down into those various categories and see what makes them up. And it drills down, as I was telling someone the other day, we could have done that in the banner system, that is our official GL system, but it would take you like days and days to get that information. So if Dr. Cavoni was to ask me, well, Susan, what makes up institutional financial assistance? I could have said, well, I'll get that for you, but it's probably going to be a couple of days. With this tool, you can actually online go right into that category and drill down. So just some highlights. First off, I'd like to say, I think given the year that we've been in, this financial report is remarkable for campus. So our tuition and fees, I mean, who would have ever thought this time last year? But our tuition and fees for this year are actually tracking 106% over budget, or that's $6.6 million over our actual budget for tuition revenue. State appropriation, which is another piece of good news. We had planned for a 10% mid-year reduction in state appropriation. That did not come to pass, so we're actually tracking to our original budget. Grants and contracts are tracking slightly higher than prior years, and that really is all about the bulk of the CARES funding coming to campus. Other revenue, that's down. You'll find in other revenue, there's categories like your athletic revenue, which, of course, you would expect to be down. It's down about 50%. It's tracking 50% to budget, but actually, it's about $3 million over last year for this quarter. Looking at the expenditure side, this is such great news for campus, and I just can't overstate that. If you just look at the bottom line, total expenses are tracking $25 million below the prior year. And this is just a testament to the good work that the entire campus has done. It's been a very difficult year. We put hiring freezes, or I like to say hiring frost. There was not actually no hiring going on, but we really, really scrutinized hiring. We didn't do traveling, and we really cut back on expenditures. So the two folks sitting behind me, Becca Russell and Christy Smith, actually had the great task of looking at every expenditure that came across and opening up pro cards. And so it's been, you know, it's been a difficult year for everyone. But I knew we could do this, and we've shown that we can do it by the remarkable $25 million below the prior year. So that's, Linda, that's all I have on agenda item one.
Okay, thank you, Susan. Any questions or discussions?
Linda, I just wanted to comment that I commend Susan and the team, especially Rebecca, for the work of the new system. It's been great for us to have more and better information to make informed decisions. And it's always a thrill. We had a call with them. It's always a thrill to see someone as passionate as Rebecca is about new toys. So that was fun as well. So glad that we were able to put this in and help us as we make decisions in the future.
Absolutely. So if there are no more questions, I'll call for a motion.
So moved.
So moved.
Second.
Second. George? Thank you. Second.
Second. Brinkley.
Okay, all those in favor?
Aye.
Motion passes. Our next action item is FB2, approval of personnel actions. To you, Susan.
Okay, so these are pretty standard personnel actions that we have every quarter. Your actual personnel actions for our faculty and staff are from January 1 through March 14th, and your additional payments are from January 1 through February 28th. The remainder of the personnel actions and the one-time payments you'll see at the final board meeting for the year. So, Linda, that's all I have on that item.
Okay, any questions on that? Okay, and then in case I will call for a motion.
So moved.
Thank you, George. Second.
Second.
Thank you, David. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, FD2 passes. Our third and final item would be approval to transfer reserve funds for the transit fleet renewal.
So this item, I'm going to turn it over, if we can get Jennifer Tugas up. Dr. Tugas is our AVP for Business Services, and she's also very, very involved with running the parking and transportation department, so her expertise, I think, will serve us well to go through this agenda item. So, Jennifer, when you'd like to take over, I'll move the screen.
Thank you. We appreciate your time this morning. We are kind of renewing our efforts to update our fleet, to maintain our transit fleet. These efforts were put on pause when COVID. We were literally ready to move forward with the RFP process to award a bid last March, and then last March happened. So this is a continuation of a phased plan to renew our campus fleet. And the strategy that we're using is to rehabilitate existing equipment. And so the refurbishment of one last model year 2005 plus, which will give us expected use of 10 to 12 years, and then purchase two refurbished buses to replace two model year 1999 buses that we have that we use as part of our fleet. And those are reserve buses, so that when we have a bus that needs to go to the shop, we have another bus that can jump on the line. Using refurbished buses or refurbished existing buses does a couple of things for us. It's, one, it saves us money. It costs about half of what it would cost us if we wanted to replace a bus with a new vehicle. And new vehicles are running $400,000 plus. And it's also sustainable because we're not sending the bus to the graveyard, so to speak. Like I said, we are expecting 10 years of service from the refurbished buses, so it's a very economical way of maintaining our fleet. We're also requesting to replace a light-duty KDA minivan. It's a Dodge minivan that we've had for 8 years, and running on a campus start and stop is pretty rough on a light-duty vehicle. And we've been having mechanical issues with it, so we're also requesting to replace it. Our current reserve balance is about $925,000, and we're requesting $950,000 transfer to give us the authority and the funds to move forward with this in the next fiscal year. And I'd be happy to take any questions.
You said the cost of a new bus was about $400,000. What's the cost of the refurbished buses?
We're going to spend between $150,000 and $200,000 per vehicle.
Thank you.
Are these the, I don't know how to pronounce the brand name, the Gillig?
Yes, sir. These are heavy-duty transit vehicles.
So I Jennifer, I looked this up just out of curiosity. This is a company that is known for its longevity and service. It's been around since 1890. Celebrated its 125th anniversary in 2015. It was big in the World War II effort. It's an all-American made product. And what's interesting about it is they claim the reputation for the longest. You know, they have a huge parts inventory. They brag about their fleet service length. So seeing that that's the brand, I just was curious because I saw that on the back of a bus the other day and I thought I would look it up. It seems like a great option.
Thank you. Yes, they have been a very, very good vendor to work with. Their representatives check on us 2 to 3 times per year visiting us here and discussing any needs that we have. They've been very, very, very good vendor to work with. And we've had good success. We have 5 refurbished vehicles in our fleet right now. We have refurbished 4 of the 2005, model year 2005, 2006 year buses already. And one of the buses, we didn't purchase a refurbished bus as part of our renewal process in the past. So we've had good success with this strategy.
Regent Ball, if I could make a comment, kudos to our transportation folks and Jennifer in particular. These buses are not just impressive mechanical pieces of equipment. They are also an important part of brand elevation for the university. And so as the buses make their way through and around our community, it's just a reminder of how intertwined we are with Bowling Green. And we'll continue to have opportunities to work even more closely, I think, with the city's transportation department. And perhaps get that brand spread even farther from campus. But kudos to the team. And as we're refurbishing, I think it also provides us an opportunity to do a little bit of brand refresh as well with the vehicles. So.
I think this is great. But just curious, how many buses do you have?
We have 12 buses in our fleet. During peak times, we will have 8 of them on the road, and we will rotate those throughout to try and even them out, mileage out. But our peak demand, peak service in the fall will be 8 buses on the road.
Thank you.
Our ridership has been lower this year, obviously, with less students on campus, but we're still averaging 10 to 11 passengers per hour for the spring semester, which has been strong for the transit industry as a whole. We're really expecting that the changes that we've made for the spring semester and preparing for the first year village being fully open, we've rerouted the service for this spring has been very popular with the students, and we'll be able to scale that up for the fall semester. Really looking forward to having the students back on campus in the fall. And it, as nice as it's been to have open parking lots this year, I think it's going to be a little bit of a shock to our system to see those parking lots full and see the buses full again, but we're certainly looking forward to that.
Thank you, Jennifer. Any additional questions?
I just wanted to add one other thing. It's just something I saw this morning. The professionalism of your staff as they drive these buses through a campus that is populated by students and faculty who are all looking at their phones as they cross roads, watching them stop short and let people cross right in front of them, and just I can't imagine driving and doing that all day. I just continue to be impressed. And again, I just watched an accident avoidance thing this morning that I was impressed with once again. So thank you to your staff on that.
Thank you for that compliment.
Okay, if there's no additional discussion, I'll call for a motion.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. All right, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, B3 passes, and we have one additional item, which is an information item on budget development update.
Sure. So, as you can imagine, budget development for fiscal year 22 is in full swing now. And as a matter of fact, we're really starting to really get into the granular details of balancing a lot of the smaller activities. So, just wanted to give the committee a glance first into the timeline of what the operating budget development looks like, again, us being on our second year of the new budget model development. So I want to say that says we're hiding some of the dates. Okay, there we go. So November through December of last year, that's when our budget governance committees went into full work. And we started our budget hearings. So the support units, and I want to remind everybody, when I say support units, this is at the level of vice presidents. And those are the ones that the budget executive committee, through the OAC, will hear request at the vice presidential level. And it really is at the discretion of the vice president as to how he or she reaches out to their various directors or units to obtain requests. I would think that most vice presidents know their organization pretty well and will where the needs exist, but this is up to the vice president. And so with those requests, they first come through the operating allocation committee, and then the operation allocation committee actually rank orders those recommendations and forwards those to the budget executive committee in December. Also in this time period, this is relatively new for campus. It's absolute importance in a incentive-based budget model that the revenue targets are set as early as possible so that the deans know what their revenue targets are so that they can start working with the enrollment management office to make sure that they're meeting those targets. And so that work began in the November-December timeline. In a non-incentive-based budget model, you're actually looking at that work happening in the spring. So I'm pushing everyone hard to even maybe look at starting that work for like in the September, October timeframe. And then the primary unit budget discussions, those would be your primary academic units, begin their work of budget request with the provost and deans. Moving on to January of this year, so the primary unit budget request are made through the deans and provost, and these recommendations then go to the BEC. And at that time frame, also the state budget discussions begin. In February, the BEC met and reviewed all of these budget requests from the support units and through the provost and the academic unit. So March and April timeframe, that's when the BEC really does a lot of work to decide on what their actual budget recommendation will be up through senior leadership. And that was finalized and submitted to senior leadership around the March 23rd timeline. The budget detail work, as I say, continues to go on. And also during this time frame, the CBE is developing tuition caps, and the state budget was approved by the governor. In early May, we'll be conducting small budget workshops with the regents. We started this last year, where it will be like maybe the president and myself meeting with one to two regents at a time. We'll begin to get those scheduled. May through early June, we'll continue the monitoring of enrollment and other revenue and expenditure forecast, and the budget will come to this to the full regents in the June meeting. So just a little bit on the revenue. So as far as state appropriations, the mandated programs, that would be your Gatton Academy and the Mezzanet, they have remained flat. And the good news is that the performance pool for 2022 was $17.3 million, and our distribution was about $1.4 million, or 2% of our budget.
Susan, how much is that compared to last year?
Last year we received about $780,000. So that $780,000 was built into our budget permanently during the budget session. This additional $1.4 is on top of that. And as far as percentage-wise, as if you look at percent of state appropriation, WKU ranked very well with the other institutions as far as distribution. CPE will make their tuition and fee cap recommendation at their full board meeting on April 16th. The current discussion, I know with the president's group, with the CBOs, that's the chief budget officers and their finance committee, is they're looking at giving maximum flexibility to the institutions across the state. Another decision point for us on the tuition fees inside of the budget is the distance education fee. So as you all know, that was suspended in the current fiscal year as part of the pandemic.
Susan, real quick, just a quick clarification. We did not approve what could have been a 2% tuition hike.
Yes.
So not only were those fees suspended, we did not approve a tuition hike in the last budget. So that's just to be clear.
On the expenditure side, of course, fixed costs, there's a reason why they're called fixed, is they are going to be there whether we apply funds to them or not. And so the BEC's recommendation up through senior leadership includes funding for some specific fixed costs and contractual increases. And again, that's under current review by senior leadership. The KERS contribution rate, they finally did make some movement on that. The good news is while the rate is increasing from the 49.5% up to the 75%, almost 76%, is that the General Assembly is subsidizing that increase in the first year. What they'll do is they'll start gradually getting rid of that subsidy over multiple years. Another decision point for us that the BEC has addressed is salary adjustments for our faculty and staff on campus. So again, that will be a decision point to make in the upcoming budget. As far as balancing strategies, any projected shortfall that we have, meaning our expenditures are over our revenue, I will first say it's going to be significantly below what we dealt with in this year. If you remember right, we had a $27 million deficit in the current year budget. We're not looking at anything close to that. So that's good news for campus. What we will continue doing until our enrollment ramps up, the recommendation would be to address any type of structural imbalance would be using one-time soft prediction targets. that would be, which is similar to what we did in the current year, and those would be managed at the local divisional level by the deans and vice presidents. And they can basically, like I like to say, they can use every tool they have in their toolbox. That would be lap salary, travel reductions, procurement reductions, hiring pauses. But again, that would be up to the individual deans and vice presidents. It would be more of a bottom-up approach rather than a top-down to how they want to manage these reductions.
Susan, could I add a little bit of clarity to that or ask you a question? Reduction targets for next year will be smaller than reduction targets for this year, which means there will be more revenue, and so it is more money, correct?
Yes.
It's complicated when you're thinking about year versus year. Is it a reduction? Less of a reduction equals larger budgets.
Yes. And that is that's all I have on the actual update for the fiscal year 22 budget.
Okay, thank you, Susan. And that concludes our Finance and Budget Committee.
I have just one other, Regent Ball, one other just brief update, if there's no other questions on just the budget.
Yes, I
had a question regarding the distance learning fee. That motion to suspend that came from this board, correct? That's how it was explained to me. Regent Harris, when he served, suspended the distance learning fee. Is that correct?
As part of the budget process,
yes,
and the approval of that budget, it was approved by the board, but it was not a separate motion that the board made. It was as part of the budget development process and the approval of that whole document.
Okay.
Yeah, Will sat on the BEC, so that came up through the BEC.
Okay.
So just a comment or two. I know we're a number of steps away from this on the faculty and staff salaries and any adjustments that might be made there. I would just point out to the board, as I just got another email that reminded me to fill out the faculty and staff welfare. I think it's just faculty welfare form. I'm not sure if it's faculty and staff. We've not had a lot of merit increases on this campus in a while, and faculty morale has been down, and at times we feel like that's an ongoing issue. But one of the things as BEC works on this that I would encourage them to think about is if we do have the budget to do a raise, which I would hope that we would find, that a across the board raise or even just merit would not go where we need to go to address the issues that we have with wage compression and wage inversion, where we have continued to hire people at market salaries, and we have people who have not gotten adjustments during that time. So just, we have a number of professionals in the room who, the lawyers, doctors, and normally accountants and others, if you can imagine that everybody you've hired, taking me as an example, and I'm just one example of many on campus, everyone I've helped hire in the last 15 years, including the person who will start next semester, will make more money than me. And if we did a merit raise or a across-the-board raise, they would get a bigger percentage than me. It doesn't adjust that. So I would encourage that we find solutions for this, that we try to push that down to department chair or dean level and let them address diversity, equity, and inclusion issues, market problems, and other things, as opposed to just straight across the board. Recognizing, though, that we have staff on this campus who make below what would be considered to be minimum wage if our Congress passed any type of minimum wage adjustment. So just, again, as part of this planning process, realize I know the issues are quite complex, and that would go a long way to addressing some of the concerns on campus.
Since Regent Spiller brought up the staff, I'll echo some of his comments and also add that we have taken, both he and I have justifiably taken quite a beating over the staff salary compression issue that is very prevalent across campus. And he could address it related to the faculty, it has, but related to the staff. I mean, we have staff members that are contacting me that are serving on search committees where they have been here 15 years and they're hiring people in at more money than they make in the same role. And I see it the same way Shane does, as a two-pronged issue. So the cost of living adjustment, I think, is essential. And I would point out that I would hope the upper administration, and I have no doubt that the upper administration, even though most of them have turned over and are all employed at market rates, would not discount the fact that everyone else on campus has not had but one cost of living adjustment in the last dozen years. Now, there was a merit pool in 2019 along with that, but given the positive financial report, couple that with lower reduction targets and the potential for carry forward from 2020, I would hope there would be an across-the-board movement and potentially a way. And I think Shane has a good point. If we could address some compression at the departmental level and be given flexibility with our own budget allocations, that may be helpful, because the deep, and this goes back to, I saw the Axiom presentation and the granularity with which deans now, once they get trained, can drill down into their own budgets and understand how money flows, then they can finally accept that responsibility for leadership that I think that is awarded to them. So if we put all that together, I think we'll be in a good position if we can, you know, move that way. Sorry for the, I was distracted by a little bit of noise.
Regent Ball, if I may add some complexion to this, because as both Regent Spiller and Regent Brinkley have said, that we have some flexibility, some options this year. And so not to create too much news, but to create some news, is that the Budget Executive Council has done, Executive Committee has done exactly that, talked about how it is we can address salaries, compression, and create flexibility for unit-level leadership, and that will go hand-in-glove with a restarting of the market study that is in process. And so I've said since I arrived that what we need to do as an institution was to turn around our enrollment. This is going to be a challenging year, given that we're not able to get into schools. But the work that the entire community has done, and every person on this campus is responsible for recruiting, enrolling, and retaining students. Because of what we're seeing at a stabilization, and let us all hope for continued growth in that freshman class, which will create overall enrollment health and growth, we all in the community should share in that success as well, because we all do the work. And so I think that the community will be pleased, and I'm hopeful we'll be pleased with where we wind up. One caution, and this is always my budget philosophy, is one-time dollars are spent on one-time costs, recurring dollars spent on recurring costs. We can't put ourselves in a position where we put one-time dollars toward costs that occur every year. We won't do that, but I do think that we have some flexibility. And I'll point this out. You heard Dean Snyder talk about this notion of a line, meaning that someone is in a position, and when they are not in that position, the position still exists. And at some point, we put someone else into that position. I would argue that is a pretty antiquated way of thinking about how budgets work. It's commonplace at universities, but we are moving away from that, meaning how much money do I have, on what do I need to spend that money, and can I change the color of that money? So you heard David talk about being able to make shifts and allocations within a subunit. If I don't need to spend all this money on operating, but I have a lot of it, why in the world couldn't I take it from this budget and move it over to a personnel line? Well, because that's not the way the system was built so many years ago, but we're getting finally to a place where unit leadership and decanal and vice presidential leadership can make those kinds of decisions about their budgets as they lead their organization. So we're in a really, really exciting place, particularly for folks who get excited about budgets and budget software. Right, Rebecca?
Well, the budget's not my wheelhouse, but the same effort and success that allowed us to retroactively go back and reestablish or give back the 10% cuts that people had gives me hope that some of these concerns that Regent Brinkley and Regent Spiller have brought to us today can be addressed in a positive fashion going forward. So again, looking at the budget and the reduction in costs that you all have affected is quite something, it seems to me, and hopefully we can achieve some of these goals.
Regent Ball, I've got one slide on our VSIP program, and I'm just going to go through and then I'll be done. So this is just a bit of composition of what our final VSIP, that's the Voluntary Separation Incentive Program, looked like. Just as a reminder, faculty and staff that had opted in had until Tuesday at 4 o'clock to opt out. We actually had one person opt out on Tuesday. So we're left with 125 people or individuals that will be departing our campus at the end of June. And as a reminder, they will receive a one-year salary as an incentive to depart. And this is how the breakdown looks like between male, female, and ethnicity across our campus. So I think what's important, if you look at that far right column, the 2020 fact book, workforce composition, as our current workforce, the percentages of our current workforce. The BSIP has aligned itself well with the actual percentage of our workforce. So we're not seeing anything out of line that you would not expect. So 55 female, 45 male, and again, the various ethnicity.
If I could add just a little bit of detail on this as well. When you think about the number of folks who've contributed to the university, I want to pause and say thank you, and we're going to have a lot of opportunity to celebrate individuals who've been instrumental in the success of WKU during the past decades. You don't do a voluntary separation program for a cost-saving purpose, though, because there are not really cost savings in the first year because you create vacancies, but you have to pay folks for the for that year. But what it does create for the institution is flexibility and options to think about how we organize ourselves. And so as we work through, and we don't have the final numbers yet from the state and pension systems and some other work that will become clear, but vice presidents and deans know who in the areas will be departing. But that means that if we think differently about the way in which our organizations are comprised, and it gives us a chance to rethink, reimagine, and reinvent those organizations. You've heard me use the example of faculty not being flexible resources, right? We can't take a faculty member in history and move that faculty member to teach a course in business. It just doesn't work that way. And so this also creates a strategic opportunity for our academic leadership, the provost, and some of our staff areas as well, to think about where it is we're investing, where those dollars are spent, and we'll take the next really year to do that work, I think. And it's going to be an important, exciting time. At the same time, the number of folks that are leaving is not insignificant, and so we'll find critical needs that must be met for the institution and make sure that we're addressing those. Again, in terms of change management, this is really one of the last parts of that process.
Could you provide for the board some clarity? I know we talk about gender and ethnicity here, but what's the faculty staff breakdown of that?
I apologize that I'm stumbling a little bit, but it's around 70, I want to say 73 staff and 53 or 52 faculty.
Depending on who withdrew, right?
Yes. Yeah. So,
okay.
Yes.
Yes. So a larger number of staff than faculty. So, Regent Ball, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Susan. I didn't want to move in too quickly there. I think that includes just about everything in our committee today, and I'm done. Thank you.
Thank you, Regent Ball.